What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
At least there's pizza, Nick.
Yes, at least there is pizza. I mean, that's been a popular topic on Nets Twitter because the Nets have not been too popular themselves. But before we get started, as always, you know, check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Jack, six straight losses, you know, a beatdown and a heartbreak loss, you know, in this back-to-back against Memphis and Washington. It's been a real struggle. What are your thoughts on the team right now? Not directly about the games, but their overall thoughts of the team and the direction they're in.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of analyze it off the basis of this mini stretch here, Nick, because there's been so many ups and downs. We were talking a little bit just before we started recording that you get caught up in the emotion a little bit. You sort of think irrationally. You make rash calls, which is what Twitter is for and all those wonderful things at the same time. But I think looking at the direction going forward, I think the Nets lack a lot of things and we simply aren't a great team. We're not even a good team yet. And I don't think that that's a hot take by any stretch of the imagination. D'Angelo Rutten, we don't have any great players either. I think it's reflected in our roster construction, like you said to me as well. And Coach Kenny's not a great coach. Sean Marks, you can argue, is a good GM, but I don't think he's a great GM yet because I think that Alan Crabb move probably takes away a lot of the great things he has done, but he has made some good moves. So I think the Brooklyn Nets franchise as a whole is good, but we want to be great and we need to do a lot of these things that we're not doing and all the mistakes we're making. And yes, the officials have had a massive impact in the last sort of couple of days, but I think a lot of it the onus needs to be on the Nets players, the Nets coaches, the Nets officials, all these sort of people from the franchise top down.
Yeah, just overall, like you said, Jack, and when a team, you know, whatever you want to call the Nets before the season started, you know, an average team, above average, slightly below average, when any team that's not great or not good and doesn't have multiple all-stars loses their best player, there's just going to be a big drop-off. You know, there's just not a lot of guys that can fill the role that Caris LeVert had for this team, and that's obviously going to hurt them. And like you said, there's issues with the roster. You know, Sean Marks has done a great job so far, but he needs to, you know, get the wins. They need to have playoff experience. They need to get in there and really contend for him to be considered a great GM. Same thing for Kenny. You know, obviously some of it has been questionable rotations, lineups, and adjustments out there, but, you know, we won't be able to fully judge him until he gets a great team too. So I think it's a whole bunch of just like maybe we had too high of expectations because of the way the season started. LeVert really pushed him to another level, and just there was a lot of excitement about the team and the potential about the playoffs when it wasn't expected to happen for a couple years. And, you know, this year we thought there was a real possibility, and now that's kind of all blown away with what's going on right now. But I agree, Jack. I think the team just has more strides to take.
Yeah, I think it's the nature of being a fan and being a Nets fan more than any other. I mean, I can't imagine being as long-tenured a fan as, you know, you and many of our listeners, but, you know, I've struggled a bit in the past 5 years or so that I've sort of become a more fervent fan, but it's just a struggle, and it's going to be a struggle for the Nets and a lot of other franchises in the NBA. We are not alone in trying to build, you know, a ready-made, consistent playoff contending team, and there are different ways to go about it. The Nets are going down their route. There are going to be plenty of steps to take along the way. A lot of the right moves need to be taken. A lot of steps need to be taken forward, like you said, Nick, and a lot of strides in terms of plays individually, as well as the coaches, the development team, the GM, and Sean Marks and his team as well. So I think everyone needs to take that step forward. And I think that until that is happening, then we maybe shouldn't judge the Nets as we are. But if we're analyzing them now, yeah, we're just not good enough.
Yeah, it just hasn't been, you know, they haven't gotten better enough in the areas they've been bad in the last few years. You know, that's rebounding, that's defense, that's closing out games. They've all been an issue. Jack, in your eyes, what would you say has been the biggest issue on this six-game losing streak? Has it been coaching? Has it been player performance? Has it just been the roster overall, just not enough talent?
Well, I think it's, yeah, probably the roster overall, enough talent. But I think in the roster, you know, these guys are NBA players. A lot of the guys that we have on our roster, you know, it doesn't necessarily mesh well. So whether that's a coaching thing and Coach Kenny being able to distribute his minutes and find the right lineups. I think Spencer Dinwiddie spoke last season about the fact that he struggled with the new role when D'Angelo came back. I think he's shown a little bit of struggle so far being reinserted into the starting lineup because, again, another role change. So I think consistency is key with people in life. You love to sort of have these similar routines. You know what's going to happen. I think Spencer struggled a little bit with that sort of change of role, despite the fact that he has still been pretty good so far. He's, you know, still been one of our better players. But I think executing is the number one thing, Nick. You know, our players, I've put the onus more on our players than a lot of other people on Nets Twitter. And I think the brunt needs to come to them, you know. Coach Kenny can only drop so many players. He can only throw out so many different lineups where it has to be, look, you've got to make these shots. You've got to, you know, get these stops on the defensive end. You've got to not make these mistakes. You've got to take care of the ball. So for me, it's the players number one, and then everything else is sort of just, you know, a combination of, you know, number two, three, and four, wherever you could probably throw a dart at it.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I think it's mostly on the players so far. Just like overall making shots. You know, you're looking at, we'll go kind of get into the Washington game, which the Nets lost on the second night of a back-to-back, you know, 0-6 on second nights of back-to-backs this year. 33rd straight loss on the second night of back-to-backs on the road via Ryan Rucco on Yes Network. So it's just, you know, the second night of back-to-backs on the road have just been terrible for the Nets. And tonight they shot 37% from the field. And that number probably seems a little bit higher from the garbage time minutes and the garbage time makes. But overall, like, if you're not making 40% of your shots in a game, you really don't have a good chance to win unless you're playing elite defense, and the Nets aren't capable of doing that.
No, they are not. And I think for the most part of the game, it was hovering under that 35% range. So, yeah, a couple of garbage time buckets for Reed, Musa, and those sort of guys sort of inflated that a little bit. But, you know, 24.2% from three. If we weren't making our free throws like we did, 20-25 from the line, then, you know, I don't know what the scoreline would have been. It was just, it was certainly lethargic. I think that's one thing that the Nets need to sort of, I don't know what it is on back-to-backs. You know, the good teams are able to just go out there and even show something. The Nets just haven't been able to do that. And that's through, you know, the whether that's the talent, whether that's leadership on their roster, whether that's Coach Kenny getting the guys motivated and energized, you know, to start the sort of first quarters and, you know, stay consistent throughout. I think that it's a combination of factors. You can't pin it down to one thing, but there's a lot of things wrong with what the Nets are doing when it comes to closing out and starting games. There's just plenty of issues going forward if we want to turn ourselves into a playoff contender.
Would you say the biggest problem in this Wizards game was just like straight up energy other than shot making?
Yeah, I think energy and shot making, there's a correlation between that. You feed off, you know, made threes. There were a couple of times where there's some back-to-back threes and then a timeout was called, and it's sort of, it was a good timeout called by Scott Brooks, obviously. Because then it sort of took away the energy, the consistency, that sort of vibe that you get to sort of keep the stretch going. You know, you get to the line a little bit, but at the same time, you don't get that same intangible energy from made shots, whether it's a tough bucket, whether it's an and one play. You know, a couple of times Ed Davis did his thing, but he didn't get enough minutes tonight either, as we talked about off wax, Nick. So I think, yeah, energy on back-to-backs is a real key thing. And I don't think any of our guys really showed it enough. And, you know, I don't think any of them really showed it at all.
And it's not like the Wizards were playing great. It's not like they were coming out either and playing super energetic and like shutting down the Nets. They were just playing a little bit harder, making more shots. So it was an opportunity for them to win this game. And you talked about it kind of leading in the leadership. Looking at the two lead guards on the team, Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell, both very quiet games. Both guys finished with 8 points. Spencer was 3-9 from the field. D'Lo was 3-8 from the field, combined for 5 turnovers. Just not a great performance from those two, and the Nets are going to win. Those guys need to put up points. You know, you're probably going to need to see at least 35 points between the two of them.
Yeah, and we saw, I think it was something like 58, 57 points between our three guards against the Grizzlies. And those are the sort of performances that you need. And when we did versus Washington last, again in an away game, it was Spencer and D'Angelo leading the way. So if you're not going to have your two best players on paper, you know, being able to make a statement out there, then it's not going to go well. Despite the fact that Allen Crabbe was average, you know, I think average overall, which is still probably our best player for the night. Allen Crabbe, with the form that he's in, isn't going to win you many performances.
Yeah, it definitely is tough. Like, it feels like if D'Angelo and Spencer aren't having great games, the Nets really have no chance to win.
You can't have your top scorer scoring 14 points and expect to win a game of basketball unless everyone else is scoring 12 and 10. We had three guys in double digits. You know, Rondé with 11.
For an NBA game.
We scored 39 points in the first half and then up to three-quarter time, you know, 58 points. Obviously, the shot-making energy like we talked about. But, yeah, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson with 11 and Damari Carroll with 10. You know, you can't – that's just not going to happen. You know, on any day – in today's NBA, especially with the scoring explosions that we've seen and you've chatted about on the outlet, it's just not going to cut it. And the Nets have been above average offensively, as we've talked about before, but we're certainly coming down to earth with this game especially.
Yeah, but going to the game, I think they were like 11th in offensive rating. They'll probably take a nice drop, scoring 88 tonight. Jack, what do you think was the issue with Spencer and D'Angelo? Was it just like them not having energy, just not in the mindset tonight? Something Washington did, the coaching staff not put in a great position? What do you think was the problem for those two?
I think guys are starting to scout the Nets a little bit better. They know what we do. They know our tendencies a little bit more. I think that they're garnering a little more respect individually. And I think that Spencer and D'Angelo are having a tough time adjusting to that. I touched on a little bit of Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, being inserted into the starting lineup and the chemistry issue he's sort of having with D'Angelo. You know, that was evident as well in the Grizzlies' performance as well. I think that, you know, you take out Caris LeVert, like we mentioned, it's changing things and changing the overall cohesion of the squad. I think Spencer is still a great performer. D'Angelo has plenty of upside, but these guys need to continue. There's been more times than not that we've spoken about that their lack of chemistry has affected our performances and their performances individually. We've probably touched on maybe three times where they've probably been good together. But then if you're have got your two best players not performing well together, like if you were to say that about James Harden and Chris Paul or whatever other backcourt you were, CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, you're going to lose games. And that's going to be a straight-up fact for the Nets until those two can find their footing.
Yeah, it feels like I said this to you too before, is that sometimes it's like the other one just watches why the one is operating. Like, let's say D'Angelo's running a pick and roll, Spencer just sitting in the corner, or D'Angelo's running the show, Spencer just kind of gets pushed to the corner instead of any type of movement where they're playing off of each other. It's just like wait and see, kind of like we saw with KD and Westbrook back in OKC, and it's just not going to work to win games because those two just aren't as talented as, you know, KD and Westbrook were, and they couldn't even win a championship. So I think just Spencer and D'Lo need to find something to mesh. Or maybe, you know, I was wrong and they shouldn't play together and need to break up their minutes even more.
Yeah, I think as well, they haven't spent a lot of time together in their tenure together since D'Angelo came to the team. You know, when we've spoken about the individual roles, most of the time they haven't been forced together in lineups and closing lineups or whatever, because there's been guys like Caris LeVert, D'Angelo's been a starter, Jeremy Lin, all these sort of guys. So they don't have this on-court chemistry yet. When I was watching a little bit on my phone yesterday, the Grizzlies game, they were starting to talk a little bit more. So I think the communication is there. I think they just need to know and find each other's tendencies. You know, I think both of them are very good with Jared Allen in the pick and roll because they both spend a lot of time with him. And you just, through time, you just know a person's, a player's tendencies. So I think that's going to come. But we need it to come quicker rather than later because it's starting to become a bit of an issue.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's just something they need to kind of find if the Nets want any type of chance of having a competitive season and improving on last year. Jack, are you starting to question some of, you know, obviously the last few years to talk about the Nets has been they've been gritty, you know, competitive, fighting in games. Do you feel like they're losing some of that this season and they've been a little bit more lethargic and lack of energy?
Yeah, I think they have, Nick, but I think a lot of that has to do with, we've talked about roster construction, and, you know, I think at times Coach Kenny needs to sort of lean on his guys a little bit more, whether it be these energy sort of guys, be it Shabazz Napier, be it Ed Davis, be it Rodion Skurets. Those are three sort of energy guys that I sort of think, for lack of a better term, and they're provided in different ways. And I don't think Coach Kenny leans on those guys enough. And that's not obviously a criticism of Coach Kenny more than anything. I think most people would probably say that. And he would say that himself. You know, Coach Kenny, when he's been speaking to the media lately, has taken a lot of the brunt of the criticism over his players. You know, he's sort of been a lightning rod for a lot of Nets fans' hate. And he's taken that on well. But I think, you know, energy comes from the players. You need to set the tone and set the standard, be that a leadership thing from a guy like D'Angelo or a guy like Spencer. Spencer seems to scream out energy a little bit more, but a lot of the times his energy can be misdirected, you know, towards the officials and stuff. I think it was Sarah Kustok or Ryan Rucco in the Grizzlies game saying that he earns fouls, you know, the sixth most, 9.6% on drive. So he's getting calls, but he continues to sort of argue. And a lot of guys do that, and that's fine. But I think his energy can be misdirected at times, on occasions. Not all the time, but it is a minor criticism I have of him. D'Angelo Russell as well, I think, doesn't scream, you know, vocal leader. And, you know, if you're comparing this to sort of Kawhi Pop situation, I think D'Angelo leads in different ways. And I think, you know, you can define leadership in however way you want to. But I think D'Angelo leads by finding his teammates and finding his own and sort of being able to find that balance. And I think it's tough for a young player, being a 22-year-old, to find that sort of consistency. But yeah, we need that energy, and I don't know how we're going to find it and who needs to step up, whether it's Rondé as well. But I think Rondé's role has changed and his sort of consistency, or however he's like executing. I'm waffling a little bit, but I'm hoping I'm making sense to you and Nets fans.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're trying to say. Rondé's play and his, you know, execution of himself out there making shots, and just it's almost like he regressed a little bit as a player. So it's harder to kind of give him that energy. And not to get back to Caris LeVert, but, you know, he did a great way of leading by showing energy on the floor. You know, those hustle plays, getting on the fast break, the extra on defense. I think Spencer and D'Lo show that sometimes. They just don't do it consistently enough for the rest of the team to kind of pick up on it. And like you said, Jack, they need to get some of the energy guys. Rodion saw some minutes tonight. What did you like from what you saw from him?
The first play that, like, he comes out there, he's just like, okay, I see an open court here. Bang, I'm going right at it. And he does the same thing consistently. The three ball wasn't necessarily falling as much as we would have liked, but he just goes hard at it. And you can't, you know, discount that fact. So whether that's going to earn him minutes going forward remains to be seen. But I think as well, touching on that energy thing as well, Nicholas, Joe Harris being out of the lineup the past two games, he's a natural guy that just brings consistent energy in whatever, on whatever side of the floor. So I think having him out and seeing Alan Crabb, sort of, who's timid by nature, and I think needs sort of, you know, positive reinforcement, be it, you know, the shot falling or, you know, teammates around him. I think Joe Harris is a guy that provides intangible energy as well. So I think basketball is a sort of sport that requires that sort of energy. You're going to have to name this episode Energy or something, or E for Energy. But I think that's what we need, especially when you are a team that is less talented like the Nets are.
Yeah, and you mentioned Joe. He's a big part of the offense, not because of his playmaking or creating, but just his movement off the ball. And that kind of infuses energy into the team, into the offense, and he really helps. Alan Crabb moves well off the ball, but it's not the same as Joe Harris. And like you said, you know, Crabb can definitely get into his head sometimes, and he just looks like all over the place. You really just don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah, and I think that's probably going to be the criticism of him going forward. And I think it's, you know, we're over a quarter way through the season now, and we haven't seen, other than, you know, some very minor flashes, sizzles in the pan from a guy like Alan Crabb. It's just, we can only say the same thing so often about him, but we need, you know, a guy like Joe Harris to sort of balance out that sort of perimeter threat, and as well as, you know, just that energy and that sort of movement off ball like you touched on, Nick.
Now, do you have any faith in Crabb kind of getting back to some of that form we saw late in the season last year? Or are you kind of giving up on Crabb and just that contract's going to be pretty rough for the next, you know, rest of the season and next year?
On a scale of Mozgov to, you know, who's on, to Spencer Dinwiddie, who's on an awesome contract and I have a lot of faith in, I'm certainly more towards the Mozgov side of it, because despite the fact that, you know, it's a better deal, so to speak, in that, you know, Alan Crabb can play at least, he can't play very well. And I think that's just to sum it up bluntly. Until, you know, Coach Kenny will always take the brunt of the blame for his players. And that's one thing that I love about him, because he's a very player-driven coach. He loves his guys no matter what. And he's always going to sort of take on the their sort of criticisms to sort of, you know, ease their load, so to speak. But I think, you know, behind closed doors, can Alan Crabb, you know, does he deserve a spray, so to speak? Does he deserve, you know, sort of like, look, this is what you need to do, and if you're not going to do it, then we're going to lessen your minutes? Because I think the positive reinforcement can only go so far, that you need to change tack a little bit. So, well, that could be the same for any number of guys. But, you know, I think, you know, we know, but judging by how Alan Crabb's tenure has been with the Nets, how he has responded in certain ways. But, you know, it's I'm not a coach. I'm not Coach Kenny. I'm not within the Nets locker room. I'm not on the planes. I'm not on the buses. So it's a mystery to me, Nick.
Now, Jack, if Crabb were to, let's say, continue this, you know, negative play all the way to the end of 2018 going to January, do you think it's fair to reduce his role to, you know, something light off the bench where maybe he's seeing 20 minutes or less?
Yes and no, Nick, because who's going to replace him? Like, to be honest, like, I know a lot of fans will say, oh, well, like, let's get Mooser out there. Let's get Pinson out there. Yeah, that's all well and good, but at the same time, they're not necessarily NBA ready. I know you've mentioned that as well. I think that they aren't yet either. I think, you know, you can increase a guy like Rodion's role. You can maybe increase the minutes of a guy like Shabazz Napier. Maybe you give even increased and inflated minutes to Spencer and D'Lo, but and when Joe Harris comes back as well. So I think that there are ways you can do it, but I think Allen Crabbe is going to continue to get minutes. You know, the investment was made by Sean Marks. Coach Kenny has a lot of faith in him, probably too much than is warranted. But I think we're going to see Allen Crabbe, you know, playing, you know, 25 to 30 minutes probably for the foreseeable future, unless we see, you know, some unexpected changes, which could certainly happen.
Yeah, or a trade or something along those lines. Like you said, it's almost like he's getting minutes by default just because of what the Nets need, and they need that shooting and they're hopeful for the spacing, but it really hasn't come this year. Jack, any last thoughts on the Wizards? You want to touch on Jared Allen real quick, and obviously a little bit of fatigue for him tonight?
Yeah, I think it's been a consistent issue with Nick. I still like Jared Allen's bad games aren't as bad as some of our other guys.
As Moskov's last year.
Well, obviously, that's without saying. But you could even compare it to some of our guards. And I think because they need the ball in their hands a lot, I think Jared Allen is still setting screens. He's still, you know, showing his energy on the glass, which I think he has shown a major step in, especially on the offensive glass, whether, you know, Ed Davis has been, you know, in his ear a little bit, or he's just seen the sort of example he has set. I think that's one thing that we can't question, but he's going to have his off games. He's 20 years old, as we say, you know, on more than plenty of occasions. So he's going to have his off nights, but I don't think he was our worst performer this evening, but he wasn't our best either.
Yeah, that's fair. He was definitely not the worst. But like you said, it wasn't one of his best games either. You know, at least, you know, he did put the effort in on the boards, and that's always great. But, you know, second nights of back-to-backs are definitely giving him some, you know, hurt. And like we talked about, maybe Ed Davis could hopefully see more minutes in the future on these nights. But talking about go ahead,
one Jack. Thing that's on Jared Allen as well I wanted to touch on, Nick, because I've got the box score in front of me. I think he needs to clean up, and you mentioned this on your Twitter as the game was unfolding. He needs to clean up taking care of the little of the ball much more. Five turnovers from a center who doesn't have a high usage rate is far, far too much. And I think that that's one area that he can easily fix up. And that comes with just, you know, engagement and just making the right calls, making the simple calls. And, you know, you talked about, you know, that lethargy that he's shown and the team has shown overall. But five turnovers is far too much for a big man who doesn't have the ball in his hands a whole heap.
Yeah, and a lot of that tonight was just, you know, dropping passes, going off his hands, or getting the, you know, the rebound and slipping out of bounds. He just needs a little bit stronger with his hands and catching the ball and just going straight up and trying to get the foul. You know, if you miss a layup, that's okay. It's better than turning over the basketball. But getting on to the real heartbreak, and that was the Memphis Grizzlies game last night. You know, the Grizz won 131-125 in double OT. And, you know, I'm sure most of you already seen the two-minute report from the NBA that there was eight incorrect calls, six going against the Nets, especially two in regulation, including that four-point play by Jaren Jackson, which should have been offensive foul. Then the inbound turnover from D'Angelo Russell should have been a foul on Jaren Jackson as well. You know, the refs cost the Nets essentially 7 points. But, Jack, what were your feelings about this one and losing what was probably one of the biggest heartbreaks of the season, if not the biggest?
Yeah, I mean, it brings us back to a lot of thoughts from last season, Nick, a lot of feelings from last season. I was watching it on my phone unfold as I was at my auntie's 60th birthday.
Nice. Happy birthday, so, auntie. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good day, but at the same time, hard to enjoy it when you are so invested in the Brooklyn Nets as we are here at the Buzz. But yeah, just I'm one of the sort of people that is like, you know, you can only control what you can control. And we've talked about that a lot. Yes, the officials probably did cost us this one, but we put ourselves in that position at the same time. So I don't know if you want to put a percentage on it, Nick. You know, I'll ask you. If you're putting a percentage on it and the fact that, you know, the Nets, you know, were up 7 with 33 seconds to go, how much of this game going down the drain was on the Nets and was on the officials if you're putting a percentage on it, you know, 50-50, 40-60 or whatever?
You know, this is tough. Overtime, you know, there were some missed calls, and I don't think that was that big. But at the end of regulation, 30 seconds, the fact that the Jaren Jackson play, that was a four-point play, and it was a seven-point game, you know, even if he was to make the three, they're still down four going to the next possession. Even if they get the inbound turnover, they have to foul. I'm going with a high percentage, Jack. And I originally looking at it and going, thinking about it last night, I was like, you know, maybe the inbound play wasn't really a foul. The Jaren Jackson one maybe was questionable. I think it's like 65 or 70% on the refs. if you have a 7-point lead with 30 seconds left and the refs are causing the other team to get 4 points, and then you're at the very least, if they're not getting the foul call, they're getting two free throws. And let's just say D'Angelo goes 1 of 2 in that situation, you know, they're still up 4. It's just like the refs really put them in a bad position. Yeah, the Nets could have done some things better. Like they could have closed out better on the Jaren Jackson tying 3 and not allowed him to get a good look. But other than that, like there wasn't really a ton. And you could argue that Spencer Dinwiddie was fouled on the last play regulation as well, going to the rim. So I think if we're just talking regulation, I would say 65 to 70 was honestly on the refs. Because if you have a 7-point lead with 30 seconds left, like just assume there's no foul calls in that situation, the Nets win.
Yeah, exactly. I'll probably agree. I'll probably say 60 to 70% myself as well. I think that as well, there was that Marc Gasol box out where he basically elbowed.
Flagrant, honestly.
Yeah, and it's pretty ridiculous that it keeps coming down to our Nets. And we talked about this, and I want to, you know, broadcast this a little bit on the buzz as well. I'm getting a little bit tired of Coach Kenny, you know, the politician. You know, we were in Washington tonight, so whether that was the case or had an effect or whatever. But
Kenny for governor.
Yeah, Kenny for governor. I mean, he'd make a great politician. I think one of my mates has said, like, he just looks like a politician, a guy on Wall Street. But in lack of defense for Coach Kenny, I want to see him be a bit more demonstrative when the camera's on him, when the reporters are in front of him, because we see that energy when he's on the sidelines. We see him all in, and you know he could probably get a million texts. There aren't many coaches who are more demonstrative than he is. But when he's asked the questions by the Nets reporters and the away reporters, you know, he's saying all the right things. Yes, we're valuable for the last 2 minute report for that transparency. You know, bullshit, bro. Like seriously, I'm not fucking grateful for it. I'm like, why do we need to like have that broadcast? I think that the Nets PR guys are doing a wonderful job of broadcasting and sort of making the Nets credible in the way that they're interacting with the higher-ups in the NBA. But I wouldn't mind, you know, a bit of Fizdale action from a guy like Coach Kenny. You know, take that for data. You know, it's bullshit. Like, let's back up our guys. And you said, I'd love to hear your thoughts, Nick. I know them, but I'd love for the Buzz listeners to hear them as well in relation to some of other coaches. And because Kenny loves these players and he loves the game so much, show that passion, and you know we'll start a GoFundMe for you, Kenny, if you want to pay that $10,000, because we want to see that, you know, that Brooklyn grit, or you know, whatever sort of spirit that, you know, the Nets have, you know, displayed to the media, because that's what, you know, other fans see, and that's what is broadcast to the rest of the NBA world as well.
Yeah, it almost is like the Nets are trying to be too political. And I think it's just not Kenny. I think it's Sean Marks. I think it's the whole organization. I understand it's trying to set the culture, but like you said, Jack, sometimes he just needs to come out and be like, you know, it's just straight bullshit. Like, it's happened to the Nets way too many times and a lot higher rate than a lot of other teams in the NBA. It's not like it's just happening to them, you know, once every 20 games. You make the argument on Sunday's game against Philly, you know, Joel Embiid traveled even though the NBA said that he didn't. There was calls in that game that were incorrect that went against the Nets and they lost the game. It happens way too much to the same team for the NBA not to really do anything about it or mention to the refs or make sure the Nets are getting better refs, because it obviously is something going wrong. And even just like specifically Spencer Dinwiddie, I feel like he's a guy who just does not get calls. And there was a call in overtime that went against him where Garrett Temple fouled him 3 times, and then he happened to knock the ball out of his hands and it touched Spencer last. Like, dude, if you're going to review, and this is on the NBA too, not to get off topic, but the NBA, if you're reviewing a play and there's a clear foul and the ball goes out of bounds because somebody fouled them, it should be the team's ball that was fouled. Just like the WNBA has, like Ryan Rucco brought on the broadcast. If you see the foul, it should go to the right team. It shouldn't just be this, you know, nonsense where, oh, whoever touched it last. If there's a foul, there's a foul. You need to kind of make the adjustment there. And they go back to the Nets, like you said, Jack. You know, one thing, Jason Kidd wasn't a good coach for the Nets, but one thing he did do, and we were talking about this before, is they were in that first round series against Toronto. Joe Johnson was getting hacked. He was getting fouled every play. The next game, I think it was Game 5, he went in on the refs. Game 6, Joe Johnson went to the foul line double-digit times. That's something Nets need to do. I think Kenny once in a while just needs to be like, you know what? That's trash. The refs cost us the game. Because they're really like, you know, I understand what he's trying to say. Like, we have to be better ourselves. But how much better because of Nets have been in that situation if you're down 7 and the refs are resulting in the Grizzlies getting 7 points? Like, I don't know what they could have really have done that would have been that much better that would have guaranteed them a win.
Yeah, I think you're on the money there, Nick. And I think if you're comparing Coach Kenny to some of the other sort of coaching luminaries of, I think the only sort of guy who has, you know, this high up reputation that doesn't sort of make those comments is Brad Stevens. And even he's known for an outburst or two.
Yeah, he's been fine before.
Exactly. So if you're comparing him to like Stevens, Popovich, Kerr, all those guys, Doc Rivers, you know, all these sort of guys, Thibodeau, I mean, I'm not as high on Thibodeau, but he has, you know, an established sort of resume. I think Coach Kenny needs to have an outburst or two for him, for himself to get noticed. And I think a lot of the Nets guys in general, other than Spencer Dinwiddie, aren't going to sort of make those sort of arguments. You know, D'Angelo Russell is generally, whenever we see him sort of not get the calls, he's a very level-headed, and I think that that is a positive of his, but it can also be like a guy like, if this is going to be our leader going forward, we want to see that real passion from you at the same time, which Spencer does show on more than occasion. And I guess, like I said, it can be a bit of a negative, but in relation to Coach Kenny, I think he needs to, you know, it goes to, those fines go to charity, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They go to charity. And so, I'm sure Mikal, the owner, wouldn't mind helping him out with a fine either. So
yeah, and Joseph as well. These guys have got deep pockets. Who cares? Like, you know, it's going to a good cause anyway. Especially after that Memphis game. If it's not going to happen then when is it going to happen? So I think that more than, you know, game time coaching, so to speak, for Coach Kenny, I want to see that passion that he's showing on the court as a sideline coach, you know, off the courts when the mic is in front of him too.
Yeah, and I think that, like, and not just on Kenny, like we're saying, it's kind of on the Nets organization and changing their tone, because I'm sure it's coming from the PR from Sean Marks to kind of stay relaxed, not go off on the refs. And, you know, like you said, Jack, in any occasion it should have happened, it should have happened after that Grizzlies game. There's really no excuse about it. It's like the NBA can say whatever they want, but six incorrect calls in a clutch time situation, the end of the fourth quarter and two overtimes, you know, six going against the Nets, it's just like, it's just not right. It's not fair. Like, there's no way to put it. And it happens to the same team way too much, especially because it's documented.
Yeah. And I think that when you are asked post-game, you know, the Nets media people who do a fantastic job, they go to the players and they go, okay, this is the sort of tone that we want to set. This is what we want to say, which is why, you know, you wait an hour, half an hour. You don't go directly to the players right after when they're equally heated. So I think that's one thing to watch going forward, to see, you know, how the Nets respond, you know, in the media, whether it's the coaches or the players after those sort of close losses, because, you know, there's still plenty of season to go left, and I'm sure that we're going to be in that position sooner rather than later.
Exactly. It's bound to come again. I mean, Jack, what did you have any thoughts you wanted to go over the game? I mean, there's not really a ton to say. The Nets didn't play great in this one. They had a really nice fourth quarter run to start the fourth, and they won the fourth 31-26. Obviously, that closeout in the end, you know, like we said, some of it was on the Nets, but mostly on the refs. And overtime one wasn't terrible. Overtime two, it looks like they kind of ran out of gas, and Mike Conley just took over, and they had the better players.
Yeah, I thought we played, if we're looking at the performance overall, I thought we played quite well, Nick. You know, we got a lot from our guards, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. Damari Carroll had his sort of comeback game. And he continued that to a small extent in the Wizards game as well. So it was nice to see him find his footing, whether he finds himself in the starting lineup for Rondo Hollis-Jefferson. I'd personally like to see it because I think he can space the floor much better. And I think that despite the fact that Rondo is probably maybe a marginally a better defender, when it comes to our offense, which is our strong point right now, Damari just adds so much more. So nice double-double from him. Ed Davis continues his consistency. Probably our most consistent player this season. And we shot the ball well and we got to the free throw line. So all the ingredients there were for a win. It just was, you know, the officials were that, you know, that poison, that antidote to sort of getting into the W.
Yeah, and I liked some of the things I saw from Jared Allen this game. Not like super productive in terms of offense. You know, he had 15 points, 5 of 5, 12 rebounds. Five assists, though. The passing was very nice. And he had a couple really strong rebounds inside against Marc Gasol. I felt like there was a point in the third quarter where Jared Allen just like completely out-jumped Marc Gasol by like a foot. And I think at that point he realized, wow, like I'm that much more athletic than this guy I'm going against. Let me take advantage of that. And we saw him kind of glide to the rim on a couple rolls, really use his quickness on the offensive board. So Jared Allen had a really great performance. And, you know, we saw Spencer Dinwiddie have some big moments in that fourth quarter too. D'Angelo had some big moments in that second overtime, but both guys didn't really shoot well from the field. It's about trying to find that consistency out there in times of like shooting a decent percentage. I don't think you need to shoot 50%, but they still need to shoot like mid to high 40s. You know, 30, 35 is not going to cut it.
Yeah, reading the floor and knowing what play to make. And, you know, D'Angelo did it on occasion, you know, doing those pull-up threes, which have become somewhat of a weapon of him. I'm still not ridiculously confident in it. But for him to become, you know, an elite player, that's going to have to be a real weapon of his. But he still, you know, has an awesome floater game. But, you know, I think both guys didn't read the game nor each other well, as we sort of talked about, you know, at length already. So, and when you have your guy who is running the floor on those occasions, going down the stretch and clutch play, I think the Nets, have a long way to go when it comes to clutch time performances. I've done a piece for Nets Republic before. Karasovic was our guy then. So I think it's going to be, you know, a play by committee, whether it's D'Angelo, whether it's Spencer, whoever it is, we need to improve that. Yes, the officials did cost us this one, but as well, we had our chances. We didn't make it. So it has to be on us a little bit as well, as we sort of talked about.
Yeah. And I think you brought up Karis again. Not only was his offensive closing, you know, missing this one, I felt like defensively on Conley, you know, Spencer tried to do his best, but he's just not as good a defender as Caris LeVert is, especially with that wingspan, his ability to kind of fight over screens. And I felt like they really lacked him in that fourth quarter and overtime. And that's something we talked about, no one beyond the step up as a perimeter defender on this team.
Yeah, we're pretty bad defensively, and we don't have defensive talent outside of Jared Allen right now to sort of be able to lift us. And only he can do so much, you know, when he's at the rim, sort of, you know, doing, cleaning up the sort of dirty work.
And then when he does, it seems like the other team just swoops in for an offensive rebound because no one boxes out his guy.
Exactly. So he can only do so much where he has to sort of manage it. And I think he's done, you know, a very, very good job of that, being able to read, so to speak. And we've sort of talked about in season previews and in season reviews about his ability to read when to make the right play defensively. I think he's done that a lot better this season to date, but you know, he's not getting enough sort of backup. And I think Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell, we've seen, you know, D'Lo make some nice plays and his acumen has grown. I think his intelligence has grown, but he's still never going to be a great defender. But I think, you know, when we have, you know, our best defender, an all NBA caliber, you know, I'm not saying that from my own words, I'm saying that via Zach Lowe, then I think we're going to struggle. And I think it's going to be defense by committee.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you mentioned defense by committee, Jack, and that's when the Nets are at their best, when they're playing defense, you know, team defense, they're helping, they're rotating, you know, everybody putting in that extra effort, that fourth or fifth rotation when they're moving the ball. And that's when they're at their best, especially when they're playing small. That's what they need to do. And so many times they're just not putting in the extra effort defensively, and that's what they need to do if they want to win games. But Jack, anything else on the Grizzlies game? You know, maybe we can move away from some of the negativity.
Yeah, that's I'll harp on it again. I think Damari will be in the starting lineup sooner rather than later. I think he deserves to be. And this isn't to say a blight on Rondé, because he's putting up decent numbers, but I don't see him impacting the Nets in a positive enough fashion on the defensive end that it exceeds the sort of devaluation he gives on the offensive end with his lack of spacing. Despite the fact that he did make a three, even though he thought he was going to miss it himself and was going to get his own offensive rebound.
Not a positive sign.
No, but, you know, and we're talking about it as well with Damari as well, the fact that contract is expiring. Do we flip him as well? I think if we find him and continue to bring up his value, and he's doing that himself without, you know, playing in the starting lineup, but he's getting the minutes that are required. And I think, you know, if you're talking about the conversations we've had at length with the power forward, you know, Damari doesn't really like playing the four, but he can switch enough and he's showing plenty and he's doing the right things to earn a starting spot, if not at least, you know, increase minutes.
Yeah, he does so much of the small things, and that's what will help really, you know, increase his trade value, is that teams know that he brings some of that intangible when it's just, you know, poking the ball out, getting there for a rebound, helping his big, you know, the team defense rotating to the right guy, knowing the tendencies of NBA players. He's really great, and I'm happy to see him kind of. He said that was the best he felt last night. Obviously, you would assume in the second night of a back-to-back, he probably didn't feel great. Interesting to see how he plays next week against, you know, Cleveland and OKC and Toronto. But getting away from the last few games, Jack, we got a couple topics to talk about. Now, we brought this up before, and now after the Washington game, it's not as great a topic. But should the Nets really consider making the extension offer to Dinwiddie right away, as soon as the date comes up? What is it, December 8th?
Yes, I believe it is. I personally would, Nick, because I've spoken at length with Brian, with you, that I don't think the Nets are going to get that flashy superstar free agent. I think at best, it's a Tobias Harris. And I would rather have Spencer Dinwiddie on a below market value deal, on a good deal, than Tobias Harris on a near max deal, which I think would be inflated. You know, yeah. If you're comparing the pair, what would you rather have? I think a lot of people would agree with me. And for those that wouldn't, I'd be happy to debate with you. You know, where to find it at the J-Man JVT. But, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie is at the level of, you know, of a Marcus Smart, who's on 452. He's one of the better backups. You know, Lou Williams is on an absolutely bargain basement contract, just at that, I believe, just above $8 million per year. So I think Spencer deserves that deal and then some. So if I was Sean Marks, I'd offer it, but I don't think he does because he's all about that flexibility going forward. But it'd be a nice sort of repay of faith for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie because I don't think – we don't know how much better Spencer is going to get, but even at his worst, he is still a very valuable player and he still has youth on his side. He's, you know, in his mid-20s. He's not going to get fall off a hill anytime soon. By the end of that contract, it's still going to be of value. So personally, I would, but would you, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not completely sold on it yet because I still believe in the flexibility, and that doesn't mean that I don't think they should re-sign Spencer. But every game, I think I'm starting to lean more towards it more and more, just getting him in-house. And signing him to that contract actually adds to his value because, you know, it's a tradable contract. Now you don't have to worry about the fact is you could lose him in free agency. And if a team, you know, let's not say they trade him in the offseason, now the team already has him signed to that deal or something along those lines. So it actually kind of could boost his value. Obviously, 1 year, whatever he's at, veteran minimum, is still great. But then the team knows it's a long-term fact that they're going to get Dinwiddie. I don't know if they could trade him at the extension. I doubt they could. But just saying if they wanted to move him in the offseason or something like that, I think it just makes sense. And point guards are so valuable. At the worst case, he's your backup of the future. And funny enough, I think on one of the first Brooklyn Buzz pods, we talked about how we'd be okay with Dinwiddie being the backup point guard for the Nets for the next 10 years. And that looks like it could be a real, you know, scenario to happen. So,
yeah. And I think you talked about, you know, how important the point guard position is. You know, there are plenty of teams right now that would love to have a Spencer Dinwiddie. And if we were to sign him on that contract, like you mentioned, is he as tradable? And probably not, but I think it's still a very tradable contract. You know, maybe Terry Rozier does usurp him in that sort of sense because he is on a below market value deal. But I think teams will still want a guy of Spencer Dinwiddie's talents, be it Orlando, be it the San Antonio Spurs, be it the Phoenix Suns. Plenty of teams need point guards. It's a point guard driven league. As much as the game is trending towards the big man, these unicorns that are coming around, the most important position is the guy that has the ball in his hands the most, and that is the point guard position.
Now, Jack, moving on from there, you know, we kind of talked about this off wax a little bit. How bad do the Nets just need like a scorer? Somebody who just goes out there and gets buckets. You mentioned somebody like Lou Will. Somebody who can just go out there, you bring him off the bench, he's going to give you like an instant 10 points.
Nick, you're not talking about Carmelo Anthony. You haven't been watching Instagram videos, have you, my friend?
No, I haven't bought into the Hoodie Mello hype in a long time. But you mentioned the four position as two being a need. Do you have any interest in bringing Mello to Brooklyn?
Oh, man. I know our dude Flatbush in Atlantic is sort of buying in more to it by the day, but let's just give those minutes to Rodions, please. Like, as much as, yes, you mentioned scorer, and Carmelo Anthony is one of the best scorers of the modern generation, but I just don't see it. And as much as, you know, he has his ties to New York and Brooklyn as well, I'd just rather us focus on the youth that we have right now. I think if any place, Brooklyn is probably the most where he could add value outside of New York, because I think he could still be okay there as a sort of bench guy, just a presence. And I think he could as well in Brooklyn as well. But I think the value that we have already with our young guys, you know, I think that there's more. I would rather go after a guy like, you know, an Alec Burks who has been traded, you know, these sort of stretchy sort of wings who we can add in later on who are below market value. You know, Hazonia's shown a little bit in New York as well. I prefer to go down that youth route. You know, if it's Carmelo Anthony for 60 more games, maybe brings a little bit of buzz, you know, a little bit of some sold jerseys and a few more bums on seats. But I wouldn't hate it, but I wouldn't like it either.
Yeah, Jack, like the Carmelo situation is so interesting. If the Nets were like destined and they really needed to make a push for the playoffs and be competitive, you know, maybe Melo would be the route to go. But like you said, I'd rather just see Rodions get the minutes or give it to some young guy or bring somebody up from the G League and kind of let them, you know, earn a role for next year's team.
Yeah, I mean, Theo Pinson, Janan Musa, Rodions Kurucs, these guys are showing enough. Alan Williams as well, I'd be remiss to mention him. You know, these are guys that are earning their keep, you know, in the G League and are making, you know, the Long Island Nets are going to be plenty fun to watch. And I'm going to make sure that I hit up a couple of games, as many as I can while I'm in New York over the January period. But, it just makes a lot more sense. And I don't know if he fits the sort of Brooklyn mold, so to speak, but I've been surprised before.
Yeah, you never know. You never know with the Nets. They have everything in mind. You mentioned some trade ideas. Is there anybody you have in mind? Obviously, there's been some recent talk about Frank Ntilikina. I know Corey's mentioned me. Tyreke Evans hasn't really worked out great in Indiana. Any guys in mind that you think the Nets could go after to try to either get a young piece for the future or get a player to kind of help them be more relevant right now? Not
Give
a big time vet, just like a basic guy.
me some Brandon Ingram, Nick. I'm all in on the Brandon Ingram hype train. I don't know why. I just think that from what he showed last season when he had the ball in his hand, I think that fits the Nets pretty well. I don't know what it's going to take. And, obviously, he still has these ties to the Lakers land. And when is it going to happen? So many people are putting out these trade ideas. And I can't help but, be somewhat enticed by the prospect because, man, the Nets need a wing and a talented wing, and Brandon Ingram has that in spades. And I think that, under the tutelage of a guy like Coach Kenny, I think we could see something special from him, and he would probably automatically be our best four, and we could play these really switchy lineups. I think he's got enough defensively to show. He's got length, all these different things. So I'm going to start a new sort of hype train on the Brandon Ingram bandwagon, but I don't know how likely it is to happen. But, you spoke of guys, Otto Porter's going to be within the mix. I'd rather just send him to the Kings, just let him do his thing there.
Yeah, I'm not interested in him anymore.
But there aren't a lot that come to sort of spring to mind, which is why I like to throw out the sort of more wild, far-fetched ideas.
I mean, Ingram would be great. It'd be a perfect fit. And obviously, offensively, there's a lot of promise. Defensively, there's potential too. He's actually was my most improved pick, and that's not looking very good at the moment. But I would love to see him in that uniform. Like you said, I don't know. What would you have in mind to send to the Lakers?
Oh man, everyone just talks about straight up stuff for D'Angelo Russell.
But Magic said all that negative stuff about D'Angelo. Do you think they'd really like you go back on his word and trade for him, or?
God no, God
Yeah,
no.
yeah.
I think it's more just Twitter luminaries just having just
Having
throwing
fun.
out, just having fun. Yeah, as we love to do. It's the beauty of the NBA. It's the beauty of this game. It's the beauty of this league. I don't know if there is a trade package available. I threw out when I was. I think I can't remember if it was for the OTG or for my own page, where I was just like, let's just trade one day for Jaren Jackson Jr. Why not? He'd be so good as well. It's fun to just sort of savor. It's awesome. There's just a lot of young talent in the NBA right now. So I don't know what sort of guys the Nets are looking to target. And we obviously want that big fish. But, the draft looks pretty good at the top end as well. Zion would be pretty good, but that's not necessarily trade-worthy. Obviously, it's going to be heading in the draft. So, I don't think that there's enough on the trade market right now for the Nets to sort of make that big move. But, if you're talking about getting more assets and stuff, maybe they could, dump a guy like Damari Carroll on New Orleans, Houston, Detroit, any of these sort of teams, and maybe get, I don't know, Stanley Johnson. But again, those names aren't sort of going to really rotate the dial that much, so to speak.
Yeah, would you be interested in including the Denver pick if it was a scenario where the Nets got a young player back that has some real potential?
Oh, absolutely, because I think that Denver is going to be a top three, but at a minimum, a top five seed in the West. So I think that that pick makes a lot of sense. And if we can get, a young upside prospect, then go for it, because I think our pick is going to be far more valuable in that sense. And I don't know how much longer you can go down the route of just accumulating young talent before you turn into, the Sacramento Kings or the old school 76ers, unless you have that elite prospect, which Caris LeVert is. Oh, has shown. I'm not sure if he is long term. We'll have to wait and see on that. He has proven it to a small extent, and D'Angelo Russell has yet to prove it enough for me either. So I want to get some guys in here, and if we can do that through a trade package, then I'm sure Coach Kenny and Sean Marks will be more than open to that. But the packages that are out there, maybe our fans probably know a bit more than us. So at OTG, at the JMAJBT, and at OTG Basketball, you can hit us up there, slide in the DMs, or hit us up on Twitter in the mentions.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on. Obviously, December 15th is when new signed players can be traded too. That's when the transactions really pick up. And like you said, it's going to be an interesting situation of what the Nets do. We've talked about it over this next month. We'll have a better idea where the team's going. Obviously, six straight losses is leaning more towards playing the young guys and not fully tanking, but not having a great season and not really competing. And I think you mentioned it with the talent they do have. You know, the only two guys in the team that I think you'd be willing to lock in as starters moving forward, you know, bearing any setbacks injury wise, would be Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. You know, D'Angelo, we're unsure if he's a starter type player yet. Same thing with Spencer. We think that, you know, he's a fringe starter, at least, you know, a very good six man. But I think right now you just look at us Allen and LeVert as your two starters. Everything from there, you don't really know. So getting another young piece that you really could build around would be huge. Is that going to come via trade? Unlikely, but you never know. You could get lucky. You could get somebody's leftovers and they turn into a great player.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, and, you know, talking trade-wise about who they dump, it's going to be tough for them to get a first-round pick trading any of the vets they have on the team. I think, like we talked about it last year, it's almost going to have to be a package where maybe you're trading Damari Carroll and Shabazz to a team that needs a little energy with a point guard and they're looking for a wing in Damari Carroll. I don't know what you're going to get back. If you get another late first-round pick, I think that'd be great, and that'd be the most ideal, or a young prospect. Other than that, I don't think they're really interested in, like, salary relief unless it's Allen Crabbe.
Yeah, unless there's, you know, three-way trades out there and such. You know, the machinations of NBA front offices are fascinating. We all love to be...
For a five-team trade.
Yeah, and we all love to be desktop GMs every now and then, but we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. You know, there's calls happening, texts happening, unless you are Adrian Wojnarowski, which we all want to be. We all would love to live that life, but it'll be fascinating to see what moves the Nets make, what deals they're a part of. But our name is being brought up, you know, more often than it has been over the past few seasons because of our, you know, increasing young talent, and as well because the franchise is on the rise. So that should have our name in, you know, plenty of trades in the coming months as the trade deadline approaches at the end of Feb.
Exactly, because there's a lot of players on our squad that aren't necessarily great on their own, but they could be nice pieces adding to a contender or a playoff type team. Now, Jack, you mentioned pizza has been the talk of NBA, of Nets Twitter. So we want to get in the pizza conversation a little bit. You know, we're obviously not located in Brooklyn, so we can't give you the top pizzerias over there. But Jack, what are your favorite pizza toppings?
Yeah, this is going to be the coldest take of all time, but I love pepperoni. And
you're going to say something crazy.
Not at all. I'm not like a pineapple dude. Like, a pineapple and pizza is just the most sacrilege thing ever.
Yeah, you're not going to like me, but I actually do like pineapple on pizza. I don't think
all right, well, like, when we're hanging around before we, like, go to a game at Barclays or whatever, we are not, like, going, I'm not sharing a pizza with you. I'm getting my own pie. Like, let's put it that way. I know a lot of my friends that love, like, the, you know, the barbecue chicken pizza with pineapple on it and stuff, but I'm just not a fan. Like, you know, if we're sharing or whatever, I'll always pick off the pineapple because it's just not my cup of tea, so to speak. But yeah, I just love me, you know, classic, just sort of American style. That's what we call it over here. It's like an American or Americana because it's got pepperoni on it.
What's the Australian pizza? Like, what do you have? Do you have like pizza called Australian pizza or no?
Yeah, we do. There's an Aussie pizza that has a ham and egg on it.
Interesting. So,
it's pretty nice. The egg adds, you know...
breakfast pizza almost.
It is a little bit like a breakfast pizza, but I think like the tomato, there's still the tomato base to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's still, you know, a pizza pie, so to speak. So I don't hate the Aussie style pizzas. I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, doing too much with it. You know, I think you can't go wrong with just like, you know, a plain cheese or a plain cheese and tomato slice. You know, last night I had just, you know, a nice margarita, which is, you know, cheese, tomato, bit of oregano sprinkled on, some herbs and spices. That's just, simple is best when it comes to the NBA a lot, Nicholas, and it is with food and a lot of other things. So I'm interested to hear your takes because I know we have similar Chipotle loves, but I'm already discouraged at your love of that.
So I'll say this. I think when you're, you know, grading a pizza or reviewing a pizza, you want to have the plain slice. Because if you don't have a plain, anybody could really make a nice specialty slice. And, you know, We're in the U.S., we have all types of slices, you know, chicken, bacon, ranch, which really isn't like pizza. It's just fat on a slice. And then you got, you know, the buffalo chicken, the barbecue chicken and everything like that. I think for me, I almost like every topping. The only thing I'm not going to really eat is the anchovies or something that's really disgusting that I wouldn't eat normally. I'm willing to try any type of pizza. Overall, the most classic that I do go with, because my girlfriend is super picky, well, fiance, is I'll go with pepperoni or plain. Occasionally, I'll get her to be a little bit wild, but usually it's just the basic stuff. But overall, like, there really isn't many pizzas I'll try. Funny enough, somebody at work ordered a pizza. Sorry to cut you off, Jack. Somebody at work the other day ordered a pizza, and I've never had a more fattening pizza in my life. He got chicken, bacon, mushroom, and pepperoni all on a pizza.
Well, that actually doesn't sound too bad. Actually.
It was not bad, but I'm telling you, Jack, I felt disgusting after I ate three slices. I had to go to the gym that day, and that was not a planned gym visit. It was, I have to go burn off these calories because I just probably had 1,000 calories in three slices.
My like go-to normally is like me and my brother will order like two pizzas and we'll like swap half and half. Or like yes. The meat lovers. So it's like I get like, you know, the meat lovers will generally have like, you know, chicken, a pepperoni, ham, and maybe like, you know, a bit of bacon as well. And then he'll get just like an American so we can just swap it. So then it's not like overbearing in what we're sort of eating. In that sort of sense. But I think the most underrated element of a pizza by far is the base and the tomato. Like
yeah,
that is
good sauce. Yeah, good sauce to make or break a pizza.
Foundations, my friend. Foundations. You know, the Nets are building a foundation. Of course, we're going to have to relate to the Nets. We are doing a podcast about the Brooklyn app, so we need to somehow relate. So that's what the Nets are building. You know, we're the tomato. We need the good tomato, the good dough right now. And with that will come, you know, the flashier topics like you mentioned. But, man, I'm getting hungry. I've only had what American fans will probably not eat very often, but Vegemite on toast today, but maybe I need to get me a slice of pizza.
Wait, what exactly is that, Jack?
Okay, for the non-cultured Americans that have no idea about Vegemite, it is a yeast-based spread that is unbearably salty for the non-cultured tongue. Non-cultured, whatever. People that don't have it, like... The thing that always annoys me, it's like Hugh Jackman will go on like a talk show or whatever, or Ben Simmons or whatever. They'll go on Jimmy Fallon or James Corden and they'll bring on like Vegemite and then just like dip their spoon in and just eat. I'm like, that's not how you have Vegemite. No one has Vegemite that way. It's not like Nutella. You can't eat it out of the jar. You need to like lather it on toast or bread with like a ridiculous amount of butter. It soaks it up that balance is right. And then, you know, lots of people have their preferences of going overboard with it. But I like a bit of a dab of like, you know, if we're going by like, you know, specific measurements. But I might have to introduce you. I'm not sure many places in the States will, but there are plenty of
American people. New York City has
everything. It does. It's the city that there is culinary adventures aplenty.
It actually doesn't sound that bad. It just sounds like a nice complimentary food. But pizza, I'm just, you know, we definitely have to get some slices when we're in the city and kind of maybe do a little bit of review of what we get.
I'm down for that. I'm going to be eating plenty, mate. I'm trying to be as good as possible while I'm here so I can, you know, absolutely binge as much as possible. But it is New York as well. I'm going to be walking around a heap because it's the best walking around city. And guys, if you want to catch up with us, we're going to be at the Pelicans game and the Hawks game. So you know where to find us. Nick's going to give the spiel as well. So hit us up. I'm more than happy to interact.
Yeah, January 2nd, January 9th at Barclays Center. Jack and I will be around. We'll probably be there early before the game. Definitely love to interact with you guys. Like you said, you can hit us up on Twitter. You can follow the show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And as always, thank you everybody for listening.